Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio.
The thick fog that clung to Los Angeles made searching for the girl who was going to kill herself slow and uneasy. But in the end, I'd have settled for that and more, because murder happened twice before I found the lady in mink.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Lady in Mink.
By Pacific Coast time, it was only 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But the dense, billowing fog that was heavy over everything, like a huge, thick hand, said it could be midnight. And Los Angeles could be London in May, December. So when I got out of my car and walked toward the fuzz of red neon that marked the hotel cocktail lounge where I was to meet my new client, Grace Tyler, I felt all alone and a little sorry that I wasn't in some nice, cozy 9-to-5 business that would leave me heading for home now. And maybe an evening with people who like to laugh. But when I was inside the lounge, which was imitation hunting lodge and friendly, I perked up some. My client was young and almost pretty, with dark shingled hair dressed in somber gray, and wore not enough makeup. Her eyes were swollen and red from crying. When I introduced myself, she tried to come right to the point.
Mr. Marlowe, I have to find my sister. She...
Oh, take it easy, honey. That won't do it. Who is your sister?
Sorry.
It's all right.
Her name is June Drake, Mr. Marlowe, and she's in trouble.
I
got this letter from her. Here.
Yeah. Trapped, no way out, take my own life. Hateful people, this is to say goodbye. Who's this Melnick she mentions? Do you know him, Mrs. Tyler?
No, I never heard the name Melnick before. I'm Miss Tyler.
Oh.
My sister was the married one, Mr. Marlowe. Her husband was Stu Drake. He died a few years ago.
I see. Have you been to the police with this?
No, because... Well, you see, Mr. Marlowe, June is... She's different. More full of fun than I am, and, well, she gets around, and sometimes with strange people. Dangerous ones.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Grace, what does your sister look like?
Well, she's about my height. Has long red hair, and she's pretty, Mr. Marlowe. Very pretty.
Aside from her looks, anything else? Car, clothes?
Clothes, yes, definitely. She always dresses well, except that she's overly fond of furs. Most of the time, she wears a mink stole.
Stole, huh? Kind of a cape?
Yes, it
is. I see.
June has an apartment in Beverly Hills, Mr. Marlowe. 3300 Rexford Drive.
Mm-hmm.
I went there, but it was locked. The neighbor says she left for New York a week ago, and yet I...
Yet she couldn't have because this letter was mailed here in town only yesterday. Is that it?
Yes. Oh, please, Mr. Marlowe, do something. Here's $50. I'll pay more if only you'll hurry.
No, that'll do it. Where can I get in touch with you, Grace?
I'm staying here at the Beverly Crest Hotel. I don't live in Los Angeles.
Well, it's a starter. I think I'll try number 3300 Rexford Drive. I'll call you later. Goodbye, Grace. Outside, the fog felt about the same. But there was more of it, so I was 15 minutes getting to June Drake's apartment, which was a ground floor arrangement, arty and about the size and shape of the ale bowl. I was only half that time outsmarting the cheap lock on the back door, drawing all the blinds shut inside and turning on a single light. But then I was no place. There were clothes in the closets, prettier ones in the bureau drawers, and it went on like that for 45 more minutes. Everything just as it should be and no lead, until I was ready to leave. Then on a coffee table, I saw something that stood out in that nest for the idle rich like an ear-to-ear grin on an undertaker. It was a book of matches advertising Duke Gray's Billiard Academy, 3rd and Main, where particular pool players congregate. That and the name Melnick had to dovetail or I was licked. The next hour was a lucky one. I found the Duke himself, who both knew and despised Melnick, whom he described as a hardly ever sober dirty word, front name Frank, who lived third floor rear at the Palace Arms, a tired walk-up also on Main Street. So at exactly 9 o'clock, I walked the length of a filthy corridor, stopped and knocked the knuckles on my right hand almost raw before the door inched open. and a pair of shifty eyes and a puffy, pasty face blinked out at me.
Yeah? What do you want?
If you're Frank Melnick, conversation.
I'm not dressed for it, honest.
This isn't a social call. Mr. Melnick!
Hey, what do you think you're doing, shoving your way into my room? Who do you think you are?
Name's Marlowe. I'm looking for June Drake.
I don't know any June Drake. Honest.
You don't convince me, Melnick. Now shake the fuzz off your brain and start remembering, or you'll find yourself in trouble up to your eyebrows.
Okay, I know her.
When'd you last see her?
3 weeks ago. Maybe a month ago. But she's an acquaintance from my hometown, that's all. Honest.
You're a liar. June Drake would brush you off like a piece of lint, and you know it.
Listen, I'm as good as she is any day. Don't forget that.
Get your hands off me, Melnick.
Now, get out of here. Go on.
I told you once, Melnick. Let go! Okay, now start talking. Give it to me straight the first time or I'll get real mad. Come on, get up!
Okay. There's a guy named Jaffe, Hugh Jaffe. He's June's boyfriend. That's all I know. Honest.
All right. What's this stuff, these clippings and these pictures here?
I used to be a photographer. Honest.
Until your lens got bloodshot, huh?
Yeah, on the Salinas Herald Star.
All right, Melnick. What's Hugh Jaffe's address?
It's 2001 North Beechwood Drive.
Thanks, I'll try it. But if you're not telling me the truth, Melnick, I'll be back. Honest.
Yes? You want what, senor?
Mr. Hugh Jaffe.
He is not here. I am Margarita Jaffe, his wife. What do you want with him?
A few words, Mrs. Jaffe. Do you expect him soon?
Since he does not live here anymore, no.
Oh. You and Hugh are divorced, eh? I didn't know that.
And I did not say that. Now, what are you looking for?
June Drake.
What do you want to know about that?
I want to know where that is. Can you help me?
No, I cannot. I do not know and I do not care. But when you find her, senor, I hope you find her dead.
If I'd have followed the approved technique, I'd have lost a leg on the lady's threshold. And I was about to lean on a doorbell again to try once more for an address on Mr. Hugh Jaffe when I saw I didn't need to. Because stuck over the mailbox was a letter forwarded to him at 41 Peacock Lane, Brentwood, California, which was a half-hour drive due west of Hollywood. 30 fog-filled minutes later, Hugh Jaffe and I exchanged introductions and I stated my purpose. Then I stumbled behind him through a 2-inch thick rug that ended in an oak-paneled library, where he cigarred me, then settled back and waited. We looked at each other until it became embarrassing. Then he opened.
Marlowe, I wish I could help you, but I haven't seen or heard of June Drake in over 3 weeks.
Well, I was under the impression that you two were on closer terms, Mr. Jaffe, if you don't mind my mentioning it.
Not at all. He used to be, but all that's changed now. She was too expensive for me. Lovely creature, but terribly vain.
Now that she's out of the picture, you're going back to your wife.
No, huh? I'm not. Frankly, Marlowe, my, shall I say, infatuation for June has completely destroyed everything Margarita and I ever had.
Which I suppose makes divorce the next step?
Sure, I wish it were that easy. She refuses to give me a divorce, Marlowe. Her way of striking back.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. I had a brief chat with Mrs. Jaffe myself. Well, if you hear from June, get in touch with me, will you? I'll appreciate it.
Of course, I'll be happy to help in any way I can. And please, Marlowe, call me if you find her, Number here is Crestview 89122.
Yeah, I'll remember it. Even if I find her dead.
Dead? What do you mean? Why that?
Well, from where I stand, Mr. Jaffe, June Drake is dynamite. And that stuff can blow up right in your face, huh? When you least expect it. Good night. Sure, it was double talk, but sometimes swinging wide and praying for a lucky punch beats waiting in your corner. Besides, that was as far as I could go on the book of matches. So after slowly walking a block through the chilling fog, I found a phone, called my client, and brought her up to date on the Jaffe Triangle and my own contention that if June Drake didn't try actually to kill herself, Senora Margarita Jaffe might. That Grace wouldn't buy.
No, Mr. Marlowe, I can't believe that.
Well, maybe you just don't want to. But either way, there's still Frank Melnick. We've already met Grace, and believe me, he's got all the charm of a Black Widow spider.
What does this Melnick do, Mr. Marlowe? I mean, what work?
Yeah, he's a drunk. He used to be a photographer for some paper, the Salinas Herald Star.
Salinas?
Yeah.
Why, Mr. Marlowe, June used to live in Salinas when she was married to Stu Drake.
You sure, Grace?
Positive.
Grace, how did June's husband die?
Stu?
Yeah.
He was killed in Mm-hmm. June just got out in time. Nobody knew exactly how it happened. It was a terrible accident.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe, Phil?
You might as well face it, honey, because the chances are slim that that's the whole story.
What?
Look, Grace, suppose... Well, suppose something else happened, like June being responsible for Stu's death.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and Melnick, the photographer, with a picture to prove it. You know, a small case of blackmail.
Oh, no. No, Phil, you're wrong. She wouldn't kill. I know that.
Okay,
she
okay. She's your sister, honey. I'll do the dirty guesswork for both of us until we get some proof. And right now, that makes back to the hacienda of one Senora Jaffe my best bet. Because the lady there is both jealous and hot-tempered, a daily double that always runs in the money. So long, baby.
Goodbye.
When I got back to my car and pointed it at 2001 North Beachwood Drive again, I was feeling pretty low because no matter which way I added things, June Drake always came out a minus, which wasn't good. But sometimes Lady had a real sweet sister. But then I told myself it was still the fog making the good look better and the bad worse, and to concentrate on my driving and the facts I had to go on. When I did just that, I took my foot off the accelerator and slammed it down onto the brake hard. But it suddenly occurred to me that I was going the wrong way. Because if I was right about Frank Melnick being a blackmailer and June Drake a killer, the Senora would keep a lot longer than the drinking man in the Palace Arms, third floor, rear. I was only three quarters of an hour getting back down to Main Street, but even as I started up the foul-smelling rickety stairs, a small voice inside kept telling me that I was too late. But a second later, as I moved quietly toward Melnick's door, two other voices, not so small and coming from the room in question, said otherwise. Said that Melnick was still around and as healthy as ever. But better than that his guest was the lady my client was paying me to find. A lady named June Drake. All of which made this a good time for my right hand and the .38 in my pocket to get together while I listened carefully. Then moved closer until I was next to the door. Oh, an empty gin bottle.
What was that?
I don't know. Outside in the hall.
Open up, Melnick, before I blast my way in. Come on.
Marlo, get out of here, Jim. Okay, wise guy, wait a minute.
For what? The lady's exodus? I warned you, Melnick, get back.
Hey, what's the matter with you? What are you doing?
Looking for June Drake, remember? Now, where is she?
What are you talking about? I'm alone in here.
Yeah? You always talk to yourself in a high voice, don't you? That window to the fire escape there is always open on foggy nights, too, isn't it? Listen, smart guy, I want to know where she... Hey, wait a minute, this mink's stole here. Maybe it doesn't matter where she went. Maybe she'll be back after she thinks I'm gone.
I don't think so. You see, mister, June Drake never left. She's right behind you, stupid!
Yes. Oh.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, you'll find both pleasure and a chance for profit when you listen to Sing It Again, CBS's hour-long Saturday night cavalcade of melody, riddles, and prizes. Your chance for the greatest prize in radio, $53,000. When Sing It Again comes your way over most of these same CBS network stations later tonight, be sure you're listening. $53,000. It might be yours. Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Lady in Mink.
Maybe June Drake had used the spiked heel of a shoe, maybe the butt of a pistol, but either way, it didn't matter because on the way to the floor, I'd bounced once off the sharp corner of an end table and... This was why all the lights in the world had gone out for me at once. Hours they blinked on again one at a time, and I dragged myself hand over hand along the length of an iron bedpost until I was standing. I saw there was blood oozing from a cut on the right side of my face. But as the two rooms focused into one again, I forgot about the slightly battered Marlowe and concentrated instead on an open newspaper lying at my feet. Because written across it with an eyebrow pencil in firm but feminine hand were the words, "Grace, call off your private detective. It's too late to help me. I'm near the end. But before I go, I'm going to take the two people with me who have wrecked my life. Goodbye, June." At that, I started for the door and a hall phone to call the police. But then I stopped. Conscious for the first time of the half-circle of hushed, gaping faces and bathrobes that stood in the doorway. The gaping faces that weren't turned toward me, but over to a shadowed corner where, face down in a pool of his own blood, was the dead form of Frank Melnick. In the middle of his back, an ice pick. Red to the hilt.
Lieutenant Ibarra's office. Sergeant Mooney speaking.
Marlo Mooney, where's Ibarra?
He had to go out of town.
Oh. Well, look, Mooney, I'm at a place called the Palace Arms on Main near 4th. Third floor rear. There's a man named Frank Melnick with an ice pick in his back. Very dead.
Know who he is, Marlowe?
Yeah, an ex-newspaper photographer. A drunk and, I think, a blackmailer in reverse order.
Any idea who did it?
Uh-huh. One June Drake. A red-headed lady in mink. Was out to kill herself just as soon as she tidies up her affairs a bit, which I think includes killing again. So if you'll put out a call for her... The mink, by the way, is a cape. The lady, young and about 5'6". I'll try to get to what I think is her next stop before she does. Call you later. Through to my client and broke the news, she gasped and kept repeating no in a small, strained voice that kicked at the lining of my insides no matter how fast I talked. So in one breath, I told her that I was going first for Margarita Jaffe, then her husband, either of whom could be next on June Drake's final agenda. Then I gave her the Crestview phone number that Hugh Jaffe had given me. Told her to call me there in an hour, hung up and ran for my car in 2001 North Beechwood Drive. Feeling punk. It was a minute better than midnight when I got there, and it was 10 wet, dripping minutes more before the door finally opened. A hatchet-faced housekeeper with a stocking on her head said that Mrs. Jaffe had left a half hour ago, saying something about meeting a woman. And the housekeeper would have said more, but I was already back in my car heading for Brentwood in number 41, Peacock Lane. There, the Oriental houseboy said the boss man was busy playing poker in the den. And something stronger than Esperanto, I made it clear that my business was more important. A minute later, a door opened on the far side of the room.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Yeah, go ahead. Well, aren't you working a little late tonight, Marlowe?
Murder isn't always done during office hours, Mr. Jaffe.
Murder?
Yeah, with an ice pick at that. Tell me, have you heard from your wife or June Drake tonight?
No, of course not. Why do you ask?
Because June Drake just killed a man named Melnick.
Killed a man? Why, the...
That's what, Mr. Jaffe?
That's hard to believe.
Why? Because it was a man... What were you expecting?
Don't be absurd, Marlowe. I was expecting nothing like this at all. It's a shock to me. Excuse me. I'll take it myself, Jung, in the dining room. I'll be with you in a minute, Marlowe.
All right, Mr. Jaffe. Make it fast, will you? Love to listen on telephone.
June, listen to me. You don't know what you... Wait a minute. The private detective here, I think, is listening in on the extension.
It doesn't matter anymore. Nobody can stop me now, Hugh. I'm leaving tonight. To let you know that you don't have to worry anymore, that I won't be any...
Never mind that. Where are you, June? Tell me.
I'm out in Santa Ocean Way Hotel. But don't try to do anything, Hugh. It's too late. Much too late. Goodbye.
Pretty talkative.
Marlo, you heard that, didn't you?
Yeah, I heard it all right. You heard that too, didn't you? I didn't like it, Jaffe, so... Oh, don't bother. This one's mine. I'm expecting it. Hello?
Hello, I wanted to... Oh, is that you, Marlowe?
Yeah. Look, Grace, your sister just called and...
Oh,
well, it doesn't look too good, honey.
Oh, Grace called here. Oh, but Phil, where is she? Do you know? Is she all right?
No, she isn't, Grace. Any way you look at it. Now, tell me, where are you?
At my place, the Beverly Crest Hotel.
All right, now stay there. I'll talk to you as soon as I can, Grace. Goodbye.
But where are you going?
Thanks for your cooperation, Jaffe. It's been a lot of help. I'll also talk to you as soon as I can. Believe me. When I got outside, piled into my car, and took off, I didn't know if I was racing to keep a mixed-up girl from committing suicide or going after a murderer who was scheduled to kill again. I was 20 precious minutes following the wriggle at Sunset Boulevard from Brentwood to Santa Monica, where it hits into US 101 that parallels the Pacific. And out there with the fog even thicker, I was 20 minutes again finding the Ocean Way Hotel. The landlady there was a fat henna blonde with a mouthful of gold and foul language. She said that she never heard of a June Drake until I lied that I was an L.A. cop and described the girl as a lot of red hair flowing over a mink stole who could be using any name. Then she told me that what I called June had just been a woman visitor a little while ago. At that, we started down a short corridor to a rented room, fast.
I wouldn't do this for no one but a cop. Brother, believe me, we both better be talking about the same girl. Raising a fuss at this hour of the night. It's a room there.
No light on. I thought you said she had a visitor.
Maybe the visitor went home. What do you expect? 2 o'clock in the morning.
Not a peep. Come on, open it up.
Open it up. Now he tells me. He's got my keys. They're over on the other side in my room.
Okay, then we'll get in the hard way.
You cut it out, you'll bust my door.
Take it easy, Blondie. You're in for a shock.
Oh, dear.
Okay, turn the lights on.
Oh. That's the woman that visited her.
Yeah. Spanish woman known as Margarita Jaffe. Ice pick and all.
I better get a little air over here by the window. I don't feel so good.
Yeah, and I better get to a phone and... Hey, there's a cigarette over there. It's still smoldering. She may not be very far away.
Mother, you said a mouthful. Come here and look.
What is it? What do you see?
Right there. Near the pier under that street lamp. Ain't that the one you're after?
Where? Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Red hair and mink stolen
clothes. She's
seen us. Right out to the end of the pier.
She's running.
Call the cops. Blondie, sit tight. I'll see you later. By the time I got out to the street and across to where we'd seen her, she was already out onto the pier. I caught one glimpse of her red hair and then nothing but the fog that swallowed her up like she was made of smoke. I ran toward the spot where she had disappeared and tried to yell over the crash of the waves for her to come back when I heard it. After that, things happened fast. From somewhere, the cop on the beat, then Blondie, then a couple of scared kids who'd been necking in a car, and then more.
I knew it. I saw her pass me a couple of minutes ago. Dressed too nice. I should have stopped her.
Mr. Cheejump?
Yeah. Officer, shine your light over there, will you? I thought I saw something move.
Okay, but in this fog, we won't be able to see much. Besides, with those waves and the undertow around here, she hasn't got a chance.
Maybe not. You never can tell. Huh? Hey, move the light over a little. To your left. Yeah, that's it. There on the piling.
I don't see nothing there. Just a greasy pole. And here, look. On that cross piece near the waterline on the piling. Was that hers?
Yeah, that was hers, all right.
What is it, mister?
That Blondie's a very valuable fur. A stole made of mink. I never could figure where people came from at 3 o'clock in the morning when something nasty happened. But they always do. Some come to help, some just to stare, and others maybe to see if they can take it. An hour after I'd heard June Drake scream, we'd found nothing but the stole. I couldn't take any more. Maybe it was still the fog. Maybe it was the thought that in a hotel room up in Beverly Hills, a sweet kid named Grace Tyler was waiting to hear from me, and I knew that sooner or later I had to call her. I lit a cigarette and started to walk across the ocean way in the nearest phone. But then, just as I was about to enter the hotel lobby, I stopped and slowly turned back toward the pier in the swirling cloak of ocean-covering fog. Crazy thought seeping into my mind like an ever-widening circle of ink into a white blotter. Until finally there was nothing but dark. I made my call to Grace and told her to get downstairs into a taxi and over to police headquarters where we had a long story to tell. An hour later, we were sitting in Ibarra's office, and Sergeant Mooney knew what had happened from the time I had first met Grace at 5 o'clock that afternoon.
Well, Marlowe, looks like June Drake meant what she said in that note. She took care of Melnick, Mrs. Jaffe, and then herself. Did they recover the body before you left?
No, Sergeant, they didn't. And I don't think they will.
You mean the undertow?
No, I don't. I mean something a little more treacherous.
What are you saying, Phil?
That this whole thing was a frame, Grace. The interested parties, Hugh Jaffe and your sister, June. The object, get rid of the difficult Mrs. Jaffe. The means, have June Drake kill her without keeping her intentions much of a secret, and then have June Drake pretend to kill herself. The result, the police never bother looking for June Drake, and when all is forgotten, June and Hugh Jaffe get together in some other city under some other name.
Oh, no. No, Phil, I don't believe that. I don't believe any of this. I can't. I won't. I don't...
Hold it, please, Miss Tyler.
I'm sorry.
Go on, Phil.
Well, this part's a guess at the moment, but I think it'll hang together. Mrs. Jaffe wouldn't give Hugh a divorce.
Jealousy?
Yeah, that and one idiosyncrasy. The Signora was crazy about money, and since he was doing the running around, a divorce would cost him much more than he was willing to pay.
Which means that although Miss Tyler here hired you, you fell into the stellar role of the patsy, the star witness. Would always be close enough to later tell a story they wanted told, but never close enough to actually catch June Drake, who has already murdered twice tonight.
Right.
Then, Marlowe, big question. Where is June Drake now?
That is something I worked on all night. and I almost had the answer once. I almost caught June at Melnick's flat in the Palace Arms because I surprised her. She thought I was going to Mrs. Jaffe's house at the time, but I changed my mind. Remember, Grace?
What?
Oh, you must remember, baby. You were there. You're June Drake.
Well, Phil, now that we've picked up Hugh Jaffe and it's all over, I still don't see how you actually knew that Grace Tyler and June Drake were one and the same.
I was lucky, Mooney. When Grace called me at Hugh Jaffe's house right after she called as June, I heard a bellboy in the background over the phone. But I didn't think much about it at the time. Yet Grace claimed to be at her hotel in Beverly Hills. It wasn't until I began to think of the whole thing as a frame that everything fell into place. The clues planted so I couldn't miss them all the way down the line. The book of matches, the mink, the red hair was a fall. And another thing, Mooney. Hugh Jaffe was much too surprised when I told him that June Drake had killed Melnick, a man. He expected the murder of his wife, Margarita.
Well, why did June kill Frank Melnick?
Because he was blackmailing her. You see, Melnick knew that June had murdered her first husband. June was stuck. She couldn't let her future husband know what had happened to her past one. So she included him in as victim number two. Besides, that's the only final payment she can ever make to a blackmailer.
Mm-hmm. Then, Marlowe, June Drake is the real person. There never actually was a sister named Grace Tyler, was there?
No. No, I guess there never was a Grace Tyler. Ever. Good night, Sergeant. Outside, it was that strange time between the end of one night and the beginning of the day that follows. When I looked up, I could see that the thick, heavy fog that had been with me ever since I'd first met the woman called Grace Tyler was lifting, breaking apart, so that here and there it was only thin, spiraling wisps above which there was the pale, gray promise of a nice tomorrow. As I walked along, it seemed to me that there was less and less fog, until by the time I'd gone a few blocks, I was sure that I could feel fresh air, cold against my face, and clean. I figured I might walk until the sun came up.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Lynn Allen, Lillian Bayef, Edgar Barrier, Whitfield Connor, Ann Morrison, Lou Krugman, and Jimmy Eagles. The special music is by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
An iron skull was their trademark. Their business was climbing walls, and it was all done on wheels at 70 miles an hour. But that was a cinch for the death cheaters until they felt murder with a feminine touch.
Sunday is a day when CBS brings you the tops in comedy, but it's also a day when you'll find big-hearted Danny Clover patrolling the Great White Way. Broadway is my beat, says Danny Clover, and every Sunday he brings you a new adventure along the main stem. On CBS Sundays, you'll also find Dashiell Hammett's one and only Sam Spade cutting another of his famous capers. Broadway is my beat, and the adventures of Sam Spade are regular Sunday features on most of these same CBS network stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. A squabbling couple can always bury their differences. The question is, which of them doesn't mind an underground shelter?
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Marriages may be made in heaven, but they sometimes can end in the city morgue. I know one that did, almost, that is. A bridegroom the lucky wife loved so passionately, she kept trying to exterminate him. The pigeon's name was one to remember, Killer Bess, an ex-pugilist billed as the perfect specimen. He had forceps and biceps like that, and a chest expansion that reached clear to Madagascar. Added to that, he'd read a book and memorized quite a vocabulary. I first met him in his hour of agony in the Cabana Adora, Eats Table D'Hote, where girls in short skirts and long stockings sold you cigarettes at $5 a pack. I was there with Trav Rogers celebrating his birthday. Even lieutenants of homicide have birthdays, if they live to see it, that is. Trav was living. The only immediate threat to his future was the steak he was wolfing.
This food is all right.
Tell me that again, Trav, when you see the check.
Well, how many birthdays does a man have?
One a year, the rumor is.
The place is crawling with celebrities.
Yeah, I see. There's Marshmallow Midas over there.
Marshmallow Midas?
The Hot Lips trumpet player.
Oh. Say, I thought he was dead.
His agent dug him up. A 40-week contract came along.
You keep informed.
Yeah, I'm a who's who. Over there, getting nicely potted, Killer Bess.
Welterweight contender.
Light heavy and ex-contender. He had his nose rebuilt and hung up his gloves.
He married into society, no? An educated guy for a fighter.
He read Pilgrim's Progress and Frank Merriwell.
A polysyllabic grunter.
You kill you. Uh-oh, Trev.
What?
Look at the killer change colors.
Change colors?
From rosy red to green.
He's gagging. Gasping for breath.
He's not gasping anymore, Trav. He's conked out. We next saw Killer Best in the Southmore Hospital, a private place where a checkbook society can recover from the sheer ordeal of living. The killer was no longer green in the face. He was blue. I let Trav Rogers hold bedside hands with him. I only listened.
You were poisoned, Killer.
Poisoned? But that's...
Not only possible, but a proven fact. I had the sedimentation in your glass sent to chemical analysis. Somebody loaded your drink.
Then if it was poison, why am I alive now, talking to you?
An excellent question. I've asked it, too. There are a couple of likely theories on that. One, you have a certain immunity to a poison of this type. Or two, you hadn't taken enough of it to be fatal.
I've got an awful stomach ache.
Oh, you imagine it. Your stomach's empty. It's been pumped here in the hospital while you were unconscious.
When can I get up?
When you can stand without falling down. Who did it?
I don't know.
Who are your enemies?
No more, please. I've been pumped enough for one day.
You don't want the police involved, hmm?
Now that you ask me, no. You fellas are too public. I don't want to be a public problem like highway repairs and sanitation. No thanks.
Then, might I suggest somebody confidential?
Who?
He's right here. Barry, make your sale.
Barry Craig, killer, confidential investigator. I've got blue eyes and I'm kind to dumb animals. Not that I like to ambulance chase, but I'm all worn out looking for hen's teeth.
You mean clients are scarce?
You've read my diary. And I read your value on the hoof.
Meaning I've got money.
Meaning I haven't got money.
You're hired on condition that you keep wisecracking.
And that I find out why you're marked for extinction?
Yeah, that too. Your friend here, the lieutenant...
Trav Rogers of Homicide.
Send him away and then notify my wife for me. Mona Best, Lawrence 6, 4000.
What will I tell her?
That circumstances make it impossible for me to be home for dinner.
I call the wife as requested to reassure her about the love of her life, perfect specimen, Killer Bess. Her more killed than killer husband. But Mona Bess didn't need reassurance. A funeral would have delighted her.
Hello?
Mona Bess?
Yes, this is Mona Bess.
This is Barry Craig.
Should I know the name?
I've had Skyriders advertising it. I'm a detective.
I've reported no robberies this month.
We've got a comic routine going. I've got serious news, lady.
I despise serious news.
Do you love your husband?
That is a leading question, Mr. Craig.
Meaning you don't?
I'm ambivalent.
Too big a word for me.
I love him and I loathe him.
Which half of you is operating right now?
The worst half.
Then the bad news I've got will be good news to you.
He's been arrested for public drunkenness.
He's been hospitalized for public collapse. He was poisoned at the Cabana Adora. You want to console him? He's in room 602 in the Southmore Hospital, Midtown.
Thank you for the invitation.
But you won't come.
I haven't time. I'm due for a pedicure. Besides, I haven't the inclination. Please give the fallen gladiator my anxious wish for his speedy demise.
Some marriages can really be colorful. Back at the bedside, the killer showed a sense of humor.
She told you to throw dirt in my face. Bury me deep.
She's bashful about her love. It embarrasses her. Her hard-hearted talk is a cover-up.
You've got good sense, Craig.
Have I?
Mona is soft as mush. The surface is only a shell. I'm the love of her life, but, as you say, she covers it. She talks tough through her martinis. It's the ancient female device. Keep the man guessing a little. Never let him take you for granted.
I've heard of husbands kidding themselves like that, but we're avoiding the gruesome. Who tried to kill you?
I wish I could tell you.
For starter, name me personal enemies with strong motives against you.
No.
No, meaning there aren't any?
There are some. What man doesn't make enemies?
So?
I don't want to slander people, make hysterical guesses about who hates me enough to want to murder me. You find out for me on your own. Don't even keep me posted. Just tell me the climax when you come to it. Until then, I want peace of mind. I want to drink with a friend without analyzing the contents of the glass. Dig into my life, Craig. Do your worst and best. Now, help me stand up and get dressed, please. The antiseptic smell around here is getting me sick.
I did my worst and best, checking into the life and times of an ex-pug gone blue blood and social register. At headquarters, Trav Rogers had as many facts for me as I could digest.
The killer's history makes a fascinating story.
I'll retire to a farm and write it at the age of 86.
I know another book the intellectually inclined killer read.
This is besides Pilgrim's Progress and Frank Merriwell?
The author Somerset Maugham, a book titled Of Human Bondage.
Do we have to go through with this aside?
Oh, a learned note here and there. It adds a fillip to the ordinary crime puzzles.
Okay, get it said.
There is a passage in Of Human Bondage that likens life to a Persian rug. In your living, you weave a rug. Your experiences are threads to the rug. The author urges every man to make his life experiences colorful and exciting, so the rug will be a weaver's masterpiece of colored threads.
And that was Killer Best. Every day a color job.
He's fought, laughed, brawled, wandered, loved, married, divorced, remarried. Like him or dislike him, he's at least annihilated monotony.
Now some monotonous Mo wants to annihilate him. Who is the Mo, Trav?
I'll give you a rundown. You can make your own choice of suspect. Ex-wives with mutilated hearts and broken egos? The killer has three. All capable of the ultimate crime against an erstwhile spouse who loved and decamped. Men about town organized into a Let's Kill the Killer Club? There are a few of those. Killer Best has been the snake in many a man's garden. A constitutional home wrecker. I'll pass over a legion of waiters and taxi drivers whose jaws were damaged in early AM rhubarbs with Killer Best. I'll also pass over some 50 litigants who have sued Killer Best for every civil offense in Blackstone. Sued and lost, that is. But I will remark on his present helpmate.
Mona.
Once Mona Phipps. A tabloid once featured her as the Society Borgia.
Lucrezia Borgia, the lady of ancient Rome who showed a talent with poison. Is that the reference meant?
It is. It seems Mona, like her current husband, was also thrice wed. Two husbands were shed in Reno and Las Vegas. A third died mysteriously.
Poison?
The case never stood up quite. His body was exhumed and the vitals sent to autopsy.
But?
The exhumation took place 3 years after his death.
Too late to prove poison.
Yeah. There is one more enemy of the killer's worth remarking on.
So remark.
A lad named Polonius. Remember him?
Vaguely. Wait. Kid Polonius. A prize fighter, wasn't he?
Yes. A contender who ran afoul of the killer. They had a match. Polonius was knocked out in 4 rounds.
So?
Polonius lost the sight of one eye. After the fight, he accused the killer of having sprayed his gloves with a blinding chemical. Polonius sued and lost, then swore revenge. He attempted that revenge.
In what way?
A felonious assault on the killer with a knife.
Polonius? Polonius.
The killer pressed charges. Polonius served 18 months in the workhouse. Polonius went free last week.
Free 1 week and stewing over his misfortunes. Quite a lead there, Trav. You know, I think I'll go see Polonius pronto. Polonius, took a lot of catching. His address was whereabouts unknown. The workhouse warden had no address on him, and neither did his aged mother. I interviewed fighters, dice players, bartenders, and I came away with zero. Polonius and the American Buffalo, they both vanished from Times Square. When I located Polonius at long last, I'd lost 2 days of my fading youth and $50. The dough was for information. A bookie named Catastrophe had the address for a price. A fraternity building next door to a college. Polonius was the building janitor.
Who's there?
Open up, Polonius. I want to talk to you. Polonius had more equipment than a building janitor needed. He had a baseball bat and he held it like Mickey Mantle.
What do you want of me?
The question should be, what do you want to do to me?
I'm protecting myself.
Against?
False arrest. Cops hounding me out of a job. Cops making me pull up stakes and go every time I get set somewhere.
Why would cops want to do that to you?
They're doing it. You're here.
Not to hound you.
Good to hear. Then beat it.
Before you beat my brains in?
I didn't ask you here.
No.
I'll take the bat. Hey, let go! Okay, you win.
I don't mind a little baseball fever, but my head's too big for a regulation ball. Now, what's really on your conscience, Polonius?
Nothing. And don't ask me, did I poison the killer?
You know about that, huh?
It's in the papers. And a paragraph in the story reminding that I just finished serving time for trying to bump the killer 2 years ago.
You didn't this time?
No. I gave up thinking like that in the workhouse. Do a rap, you change your thinking.
I imagine. You now feel more kindly disposed toward the killer?
I'd be a liar if I said I did. I hate him. I'd like to see him dead. Only I don't want to be the one who kills him.
Why not?
I got a life to live. I can't live it in jail. I got this job here. I want to settle down to it. I got a girl. I want to get married, raise a family.
Nice idea.
But I won't be able to, with somebody out to knock the killer off. He'll get it next time, and I'll be the goat. I'm a dog with a bad name now. They'll blame me. They'll blame me.
Polonius wasn't as felonious as advertised. He'd given up on his deadly grudge against Killer Best, so he said, anyhow. When he came out of the weeps, he proved what a peaceable citizen he had now become.
Listen, Mr.
Barry Craig.
Mr. Craig, you can do a big thing for me.
Like?
Catch who poisoned the killer that other night. Nab whoever it was and take the heat off me.
I'll be glad to oblige if I'm lucky. It happens to be my assignment.
Well, make it your double assignment. Represent me, too.
I'm expensive.
Well, I got $100. I was going to get a new suit and shoes, but I'll give it to you.
Keep your money. If you're on the level, you'll come out okay, Polonius. I'm after the poisoner, and I figure to catch him. So long. Oh, yes. Here's your baseball bat. Buy yourself a horsehide ball out of that $100 the next time you get that urge to swing that bat. I went back to my office, where I always go to do my best thinking.
in the horizontal on my leather sofa. Not my favorite sofa, exactly. It had too much sag. But what can you expect when you buy things secondhand? There was no conclusion to my thinking after an hour or two. How could there be? I'd fallen fast asleep. The phone woke me up. Yeah?
Larry, this is Trav Rogers.
As usual, right in the middle of my dreams.
Are you still representing Killer Best?
Misrepresenting him. I've so far done nothing for him but spend his money. Why do you ask?
Only curiosity. I thought you might be interested in his present whereabouts.
Whereabouts? Let me see. It's 4 p.m. He's toasting himself in his favorite spa.
He is not?
I give up.
He's back where you commenced representing him. The Southmore Hospital emergency.
Not more poison.
No. A near cave-in of his head.
Near cave-in?
A roof cornice narrowly missed him.
From being narrowly missed by a roof cornice, you don't go to a hospital.
Clever of you. The cornice missed him, but the dagger didn't.
Oh, stupid of me.
He was knifed 2 hours ago, a block or so from his residence, while out for an evening stroll. And Barry...
Yeah?
Polonius. You won't be visiting him at home for a while.
Where will he be?
Where he is. In jail. We caught him prowling in the general vicinity where the killer was knifed.
In the hospital, some of the starch was out of the killer. He looked scared and trying not to show it. The knife gash on his shoulder and forearm seemed to hurt like the devil, even though the patient tried to grin.
I've survived again. That's something to be thankful for.
Two strikes. Next time up, somebody's out.
See that it isn't me.
I'm working in the total dock.
You've got Polonius.
Do you accuse him?
No, I didn't actually see the knifer.
That cornice that came down on you, tell me more about it.
There's not much to tell. I was out walking at the corner of 78th. Boom, came the cornice. It landed practically at my feet.
The dagger came after?
Yes, 3 minutes later. I backtracked. I was one block from home when I got it from behind.
The dagger wasn't found.
So the police tell me.
I'll have the area combed, inch for inch, sewers, cellars, places.
You think my attacker might have thrown it away?
They generally do. Get caught running, it's evidence against them on the spot. They're red-handed.
I did make an outcry. I yelled police. My assailant would be running pell-mell. He no doubt would have ditched the dagger. Craig.
Yeah?
When I'm out of here, put a man on me, day and night. An operative following me around heel and toe. I want protection.
In the tombs, Polonius looked like he was on a marathon crying jag.
Craig, get me out of here.
If you merit it.
You don't think I knifed the killer?
Didn't you? Why were you prowling in the vicinity where the attack occurred?
I was following the killer around. To see who might attempt to kill him. I wanted to insure myself against being made somebody's fall guy.
I thought I was to take care of that.
Yeah, I know. You were representing me. But frankly, Mr. Craig, I had no confidence in you.
I see.
So I'm a schmo. Please, Mr. Craig, get me out of here.
I'm afraid you're in for a while, at least.
In? For nothing? Just for walking on a street?
Just for climbing up on strange roofs and prying cornices loose.
You lay that to me?
Lie and you'll grow a long beard and stir.
And what if I tell the truth?
I might intercede for you, get you paroled in my custody. After you've repented in here long enough. I only might, mind you.
Okay. I dropped that cornice.
You said you were cured. You'd given up seeking revenge.
Yeah, I know I said, but there was the killer on a stroll for himself, dressed like an English lord and wearing a fancy vest and spats. My blood got hot. I looked at my crummy pants and the cardboard in my shoes. I thought of how he used chemicals on those boxing gloves once and cost me a chance at the title, let alone this eye here. I went up to the roof. It was temporary insanity, Mr. Craig. Plead with the judge for me like that. Only temporary insanity. I'm better now.
Was Polonius an honest man or a liar? I couldn't swear. But one thing was for sure, he was a character. I organized the search for the dagger used on Killer Bess. Look for a dagger in a square-mile area, you'll really know suffering.
No luck so far, Barry.
It figured to be tough.
I've got men in wading boots sifting sewer slop, men emptying trash cans and poking into cellars.
Nice cooperation, Trav. Thanks.
Oh, don't be so egotistic. I'm doing this on behalf of the people of the city of New York.
Oh, pardon me.
The assailant may not have thrown his dagger away.
They invariably do.
Still... Oh, wait. Here comes Detective Wilson with a look on him that can only mean one thing.
Eureka! He's found the dagger. Finding a dagger is one thing. Tracing it to its source is a horse of another breed. After the same 14 men, plus yours truly, got ourselves acute atrophy of the metatarsals, our aching feet, that is, we gave up canvassing storekeepers. Later, on an idea that didn't seem too bright to me, I tackled Mrs. Killer Bess, Mona. Tried tackling, I mean. Mona wasn't home. Her social secretary, a good-looker named Candy Joplin, was.
Can I help you, Mr. Craig?
Yeah. First, where is Madame?
Out.
Just out?
She didn't say where.
I've got something here. A dagger. Ever see it?
I'm not sure.
You think you might have?
Yes. In a case in the library, I seem to remember a pair of antique daggers.
Let's adjourn to the library. That the case?
Yes.
Well, what do you know? Here's the twin to the one I brought in. Who owns these daggers? Mr. or Mrs.?
I don't think I'm able to answer that. But I think I can be of some help.
Please be.
The daggers, they're antique.
They're antique.
Mrs. Best shops for her antiques at the Attic Mart on 3rd Avenue. I've often stopped in there with her.
The Attic Mart. Unaccustomed as I am to antique hunting... Goodbye, doll. At the Attic Mart, a guy who looked more worn out than his merchandise confirmed who purchased the dagger.
Yes, I have the entry here. Mrs. Best, a fine lady.
You mean a fine customer, don't you?
Yes. She's here every week, always to buy. This particular dagger, it's a very good specimen of old Persian craftsmanship.
I've heard enough.
There is perhaps something you would care to be shown?
There is. The door. Following A.M., I went back for a tete-a-tete with Mona Best. The lady was still unavailable. The social secretary, Candy Joplin, was on hand.
I'm sorry, Mr. Craig.
What makes Mrs. Best so scarce around here?
Frankly, Mr. Craig, I wonder myself. Suddenly, in the last days, she doesn't confide her itinerary... Mr. Craig.
Yes?
You're a detective.
So I am.
What do you want with Mrs. Best?
Right now, I want to examine her. I'll give her to you cold. The dagger I matched to one in the library case was the same dagger used on Killer Best.
I see. Then you suspect Mrs. Best of attempting his life?
Uh-huh. Do you?
That is an improper question.
Well, do you?
Mrs. Best has behaved peculiarly. I've sensed, well, jitters.
Don't stop now.
I wasn't entirely truthful yesterday. I didn't think it properly my business. Your question about Mrs. Best's whereabouts...
Be truthful now.
Well, the fact is, I saw her packed secretly. It seemed to me two valises. I heard her on the telephone making plane reservations.
Where to?
Acapulco, Mexico. This was the night before last.
Skipped, huh? Attempted murder and flight.
You mean that...
Mrs. Best is presumably a fugitive from justice. A presumable fugitive from justice, I checked Mona Best's clothes closet. After that, I checked airport records. It proved okay. Item, Mrs. Mona Best, Flight 7, 11:45 p.m. Destination, Acapulco, Mexico. I let police headquarters check it from there.
Well, Mrs. Mona Best landed in Mexico, all right, Barry?
And?
And nothing. Beyond the airport, the Mexican police have no information. They can't find hide or hair of Mona Best. She's managed to lose herself nicely since her arrival. I'll keep nudging the Mexican police.
Don't bother to.
Did you just say don't bother to?
That's right.
Barry, you stamped into my office. You all but accused Mona Best of attempted murder and guilty flight.
Now, don't have a seizure. I said not to bother just now because a shaft of daylight suddenly shone in my head.
And the delirium tells you?
That Mona Best is not in Mexico.
Is not?
No.
But you traced it to a plane leaving New York. I placed her in a Mexican airport.
We only checked the name, Mona Best. Could have been anybody, a stand-in, a proxy, say. Said proxy reassumed her own identity on arriving in Mexico. That's why a Mona Best cannot be found.
You've got a notion there.
Bet I've got the answer to a cute technique somebody developed to get away with murder. The murder of Mona Best. I reported the purported death of his wife to my skeptical client, Killer Best.
Craig, the heat's got you. Mona's as alive as you and I.
I don't think so.
Moreover, I'm not so sure I can accept Mona as a suspect in these attempts on my life.
Right now, I'm not so sure I can either. Accept Mona as a suspect, that is.
Now you're talking at cross purposes. You said before...
To catch your reaction. No, Mona wasn't behind the attempts on you. As a matter of fact, there never were real attempts on your life.
Now, look here.
You staged them. You poisoned yourself just enough. You stabbed yourself, not too seriously.
Now, why would I hate myself that much?
Because you hated your wife more. I won't right now go into your love for her money. You murdered Mona Best. Then you staged phony attempts on your own life to throw suspicion on her, so her absence would be accounted for, so the world would think Mona Best ran away into hiding, a fugitive from justice. You were smart, really brilliant, except for one fatal flaw. Want to know where your trick failed?
I can't stop you from talking rot.
A fugitive from the police wouldn't make plane reservations in her own name. She'd use an alias. Only thing, you had to have the name of Mona Best on the flight sheet so as to hoodwink the police. You murdered Mona before you staged the so-called attempts on yourself. The social secretary, Candy Joplin, is with you in the scheme. It was she who probably posed as Mona Best on the telephone with me that first time. So was some obliging proxy in with you. I mean the one who took the plane ride to Acapulco. You sure get girls to cooperate, handsome. Now the high voltage question is, where are your wife's remains?
In a culvert. Up near our hunting lodge. I didn't kill her, Craig. It was an accident. We were out hunting deer in season. Mona did weird things with camouflage. I shot her accidentally. I was in a panic. I didn't think the truth.
Cut. You're confusing me with the jury. Even if you convince me, I couldn't acquit you. I'm only the guy making the arrest, client.
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Screen for Murder, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's a strange story titled Murder in Three Acts, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
Next week, a blonde, a bookie, and a gentleman of no distinction form a partnership in crime. Only to find that the road to the hot seat is paved with bad intentions. Good night, folks. See you next week.
The National Broadcasting Company has brought you Barry Craig, confidential investigator, starring William Gargan. Featured in the role of Candy was Fran Carlin. This is Don Pardo speaking.